We'll go back on the record. Our next case is In Re Zoloft, number 16-2247.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, I'm David Frederick for the appellants, and with the leave of the Court, would like to reserve 4 minutes of time for rebuttal.
That will be granted.
The District Court erroneously excluded the testimony of one of the world's greatest biostatisticians, Dr. Nicholas Jewell, under Daubert. The case has a lot of complicated features to it, so what I want to do is to focus
on... You said it, brother. This is a tough case.
Let me try to make it simple for you in two ways. Reversal is required for two reasons. Number one, the District Court simply overlooked the Wiemacher study, which Pfizer presented into the record. Dr. Jewell testified about it, and it showed that there were significant severe congenital heart defects that would be sufficient to warrant expert testimony about general causation. There's no discussion about Wiemacher in the Daubert opinion. There's no discussion about Wiemacher in the summary judgment opinion. Reversal and remand is required simply because there is probative evidence that supports the plaintiff's arguments about general causation on that basis alone.
Before you dig too deeply, the very last line of, Judge Wolfson's opinion deals with Rule 403. It's not dealt with at all in the briefs. What should we do with that? It was one of the two bases, 702 and 403.
I think that the core fundamental error here was excluding Dr. Jewell under Daubert. And the basis for doing so was the application of an erroneous legal standard. And if you accept my submission about Wiemacher, you can't have a judge deciding a case on general causation where the key study that comes out after the submission and the judge simply ignores it.
So what should Judge Roof have done?
Judge Roof should have analyzed Wiemacher, should have concluded that it was a replicated study, should have concluded that it supported an association, and then should have analyzed Dr. Jewell's testimony with respect to the other Bradford Hill factors, which are well accepted in this court and in this circuit as necessary for general causation.
Before you get too far, do you read the opinion as addressing association or causation?
Well, it is addressing causation through the concept of association, and this is the second point that I want to make.
But isn't association kind of a predicate to causation?
Yes. And under this court's precedence, the first thing that the scientists would look at is there an association?
Right.
You can determine if there's an association on the basis of one study. What Judge Roof did was...
Well, your friends disagree with that. I know they would say you cherry-picked a study out of the restatement.
And let me go to the second error that I wanted to make. It's on page 60 of the joint appendix. It's at the back of the blue brief. And I'll just walk you through where this error occurred and why it requires reversal. If you happen to have the brief handy, it's real easy to show you. Page JA60. It's the district court's opinion on Daubert for Dr. Jewell. Where the judge says no replicated statistically significant findings from non-overlapping data, what Judge Roof is doing there is in imposing a legal standard on association that is far higher than the threshold
Counselor, isn't she making a legal, factual finding?
No. She can't be. So let's look at the citations that she uses.
Why isn't that a factual?
Look at footnote 15, okay? Footnote 15 references two memorandum opinions concerning the expert testimony of Dr. Berard. If you look at the pages that are cited, there is no scientific evidence in this record cited in those pages. The only citation is to the district court's opinion in Wade Grow. Wade Grow, in turn, only referenced the defense scientific expert for this proposition. So if this is a factual finding, it has to be reversed for clear error because a district judge can't rely on the facts in another case in order to make a holding about teratological evidence in this case.
Why not?
Because there's no record evidence for that. This is a summary case in which the judge is saying
this is a review of what the experts are looking at in determining as to ologists, I think I've got that right, what they have to look at. And it is a factual finding on the method and the basis territorologists have in making their decision. And that is not a finding of law, it's a finding of fact of what scientists do.
But the judge didn't cite anything in this record for that proposition, Judge Roth. That's where the error is. The judge cited a district court opinion in another case that relied on the defendant's scientific expert, and the proposition as a matter of law is incorrect. If you look at the First Circuit's decision in Millward, it goes right directly to the point that you made to open this, which is the threshold question is there an association? If there's an association which you can show through one study, then you look at the 9 Bradford Hill factors. The judge here ruled out Dr. Jewell on Daubert on that very first threshold question and didn't even analyze 7 of the 9 Bradford Hill factors.
But was it necessary then to do it?
Yes.
Do you view her as saying, yes, there was an association, let's move on?
No, what I'm saying is that what she did, the error here, was to go way beyond the normal Daubert gatekeeping role and to arrogate to the court the power to resolve and reconcile what is a very complicated epidemiological record. That's not what scientists do. What scientists do under this court's precedence, and I'm thinking about Gannon, DeLuca 1, the First Circuit's decision, Millward, is that if they determine that there is a scientific association, they then look at the Bradford Hill factors, which are contextual, and they go to things like the biological connection, and then they allow the process of cross-examination at trial to ferret out what the complicating factors are and allow the trier to decide that. They do not.
Well, she had a rather extensive hearing, didn't she?
She did, but it was not, she was arrogating to herself the idea of reconciling these studies. And let me point out, and this is really crucial.
Well, you know, I don't agree with you on that. I think she was determining how teratologists make their determinations, do their studies, not as a matter of law, but as a matter of fact. And it was her position that as a matter of fact, what teratologists do is not what Dr. Jewell did, and therefore that his scientific technique does not conform with the accepted techniques in this field.
With respect, Judge Roth, there is no citation by Judge Roof for that proposition other than Wade Grow. And the only citation in Wade Grow is to the defense's scientific expert. And that is inconsistent with all of the scientific approaches that courts take to these kinds of problems, which is to look and see whether there is an association. And if there is an association, then evaluate the 9 Bradford Hill factors. Judge Roth, the whole reason why I point out this page is that I implore you to please trace back what the district court did, the analytical process, and look at the support that the judge invoked for that proposition, and I promise you there is nothing in this record that the judge cited on this teratological point. So as a matter of fact, if you determine it to be a factual finding, it has to be reversed for clear error. It has to be, because there's no scientific evidence to support that other than the defense's expert in Wade Grow.
Now, one of the points that didn't impress the judge apparently was Dr. Jewell's inability, I guess, to reconcile the FURU 2015 study. How do you respond to that?
Well, FURU actually supports the idea that there is a positive association.
Well, it also has another side.
The other side is that it cannot exclude the possibility of a null hypothesis. And that's where this whole question about statistics starts to get really confusing. FURU found that there was a positive association, the odds ratio was above 1, but that when you looked at the confidence interval at a 95% probability standard, that the lower bound of it was below 1. So as a statistical matter, what that means is that the study could not exclude the possibility of a null hypothesis, but nor was it not inconsistent with the idea that there was a positive association. And that's why this idea about statistical significance flows right into the Supreme Court's decision matrix, which says when you're doing these kinds of questions of causation in the medical field, you are not going to rely solely on statistical significance because there are a lot of other factors that go into play. And when you look at the 9 Bradford Hill factors, one of them is the biological mechanism by which the drug could cause the potential birth defect. And here the judge was exceeded the 3 biological mechanism experts that were proffered by the plaintiffs. So
can we roll back for a minute? I'm not sure if you answered this. If you did, I apologize. But you say a study, you know, pointing to the restatement. Doesn't that encourage just cherry picking one? I mean, if from a person who may not be an expert, that'd be me. Cherry picking one study out, that's enough to meet the association threshold to get to the Bradford Hill factors?
What it does is it introduces the possibility of cross-examination. The whole Daubert standard was designed to get experts up before courts and juries and then have them be cross-examined. So, Judge, if you're right that there's only one study, and here we would submit that there are 4 studies that actually replicate at a statistically significant level.
Which 4?
Peterson, Wiemacher, Jimenez, Solem, and Cornum. All 4 of those, 3 of them were the Danish studies. The judge basically treated them as one, thought that they had been superseded by Furu. I think I've addressed the Furu issue, but Wiemacher comes along after those with a much broader study, 2.1 million live births, and confirms there's a statistically significant association. But the whole point, Judge Chigar, is that if you're right in your hypothetical that there's only one study and there are all these other studies, then that expert is not going to hold up very well on cross-examination. Here,
what about the district court's gatekeeping function?
The gatekeeping function determines whether or not you faithfully applied the step process. Is there an association? Is there a study that supports an association? If so, then look at the 9 Bradford Hill factors. And the court for Jewell didn't do that at all. The court, in fact, didn't even address 7 of the 9 Bradford Hill factors because it was so hung up on whether or not it could fully flesh out the replication of these studies. And let me point out the implications of that rule. If that's the rule, either as a matter of fact, Judge Roth, or as a matter of law, what it means is that women who are taking these drugs while they're pregnant and their babies suffer birth defects will never have a remedy until 20, 30, 40 years after the fact, until there can be a complete reconciliation of every possible epidemiological study. There's no court that I'm aware of that has imposed that strict a standard under Daubert to preclude that expert from being able to testify and be subject to the normal rules of cross-examination. If I could reserve the remainder of my time, unless you have questions for me now.
Sure. Let's assume hypothetically that Judge Roof was right, excluding this particular expert. Would that resolve the issue? Would it resolve the case in terms of summary judgment granted?
Yes, because we had a general causation expert. That was Dr. Jewell. We chose not to appeal Dr. Berard's ruling. And so we acknowledge that if you agree with Judge Roof about Dr. Jewell being properly excluded under Daubert, we would lose under summary judgment for general causation.
Okay. All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll hear it in rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Mark Sheffo, and I represent Pfizer.
Welcome.
Thank you, Your Honor. The court, as you alluded to, conducted 10 full days of Daubert hearings in this case. The plaintiffs, as you know, have only appealed from one of the 4 decisions that Judge Roof, you can't isolate them. I think I'd like to start perhaps where Judge Roth, you started. The plaintiffs have somewhat ironically tried to turn this on its head. At first, they argue in their papers that there was a bright-line legal rule that Judge Roof was imposing, though yet they seem to come here today and argue that there's a bright-line rule that once you have one finding, the court's gatekeeper function is somehow abrogated and you have to pass. But here's what I would take, I think, strong issue with. As Judge Roof spoke directly to his counsel, I think said, I promise you, and that you can search the record and you will find no evidence other than Wade Grow. That is, frankly, just demonstrably not true. In fact, At page 26 of our brief, we have at the end a number of findings. So it is true that the court cited Wade Grow. She said basically in looking at her factual determination, what the court needed to do was everyone agrees that teratology and epidemiology are the appropriate disciplines here. So the court needed to dig in and understand what it is that teratologists and epidemiologists do and how they determine causation. And that question was addressed by Judge Giles in the Wade Grow, which was ultimately affirmed by this court. And there, many years ago, the court said you need multiple studies, you need replication. Frankly, that's not really at issue here, but the court did.
Hold on now. This is maybe a good time to bring this up. A study they pulled out of the commentary, out of the restatement. What's your position on that?
Well, specifically, I think what the court said, and again, this is under an abuse of discretion. You first have to start by saying, you know, how do teratologists and epidemiologists view causation? You know, would this be published in a peer-reviewed journal? And, of course, you know, the answer to that is no. So I think the question, as Judge Roof says, I'm not drawing a bright line. You don't have to decide that one study does it or one study doesn't do it. But here, when you have kind of an overwhelming, crushing amount of information over the course of 20 years, you have to reconcile the studies. You have to first look if there is replication. And to that point, let me just address the Wemmicker study, because I think counsel talked about that at some length. What's, I think, fact in the record, he said, well, you know, you have no choice. There's a factual abuse of discretion because there, in fact, was replication. But, in fact, Dr. Jewell himself said the Wemmicker study is not replication because the only finding there was severe cardiac, right? So it doesn't replicate. The other thing that's interesting about the case is it was addressed at the hearing. So apparently it seems that counsel's view is, you know, unless you have a 1,000-page decision from a judge talking about everything, we are to ignore, you know, 10 days of hearings and mountains of paper and evidence in the record, which there is in the record. The other thing is there was no supplemental report in that case. So as important as counsel is now saying it is, there was never a supplemental report, and it was discussed and addressed at the hearing. So clearly Judge Roof understood the decision. And here's, I think, also the kicker for that is that the authors of the Wemmicker state, to the extent that we're going to kind of get in the weeds on that, they did not adjust for depression, alcohol, or smoking. So not only do you have Dr. Jewell saying it's not replication, the authors themselves said they didn't adjust for the confounding. And what they said was the authors, quote, cannot exclude confounding by indication or associated factors, and that their findings were, quote, compatible with confounding by depression as indication or other associated factors or exposures. So, you know, the idea that this is a slam dunk silver bullet finding of Zoloft causes cardiac birth defects that's replicated is just simply not in the record. It's not accurate. It's not what the authors say, and that was all presented to Judge Roof. So I think what we have here is, you know, a judge who did an incredibly searching analysis, and I will tell you, I stood up quite loudly after the first time and said there should be no Daubert do-overs. In fact, there was, you know, 7 days of hearings the first time. The judge laid out a very methodical decisions, three of them, where she said specifically, here's the flaws, here's the methodological flaws. The plaintiffs have not even appealed from those decisions. The plaintiffs then argued, you know, give us essentially another chance, which Judge Roof, in her discretion, do. I don't think she had to do, but she did. And then she methodically said, looking both at the record from the 7 days, looking at all of the science that's out there, looking at how teratologists and epidemiologists conduct causation analysis, she applied that appropriate analysis here.
Well, that's one thing I want to get into. I started by, at the beginning, asking your friend across the aisle, do you view the district court's opinion as dealing with association or causation?
Well, I think that ultimately the question was general causation, right? So I think what Judge Roof appropriately said, and this is what Sir Bradford Hill has said, and what, you know, virtually all of the authorities who work in this field say, that you first have to determine whether there is an association, right? It has to be a true association. And then if there is a true association, then you apply the Bradford Hill criteria. And what everyone had agreed in this case, essentially, you need replication, you need consistency. So she looked at what Professor Jewell had offered, And she said, well, as to these three Danish studies, there's overlap, and you haven't explained why you're doing that. And then she said, with respect to Furu, if there was any open question, we now have a study in 2015 that has looked at essentially all of the population of those three studies, and there is no statistically significant association or findings. And you have not, and that was kind of one of her core issues here, is that not only, you know, you can't cherry pick one finding and say, that's it, no more analysis. It's the court's burden, I think, as a gatekeeper, to then look and say, is there a true association? Do those studies constitute association? And here she gave, again, the plaintiffs every chance and determined that there was no association. I suspect, and she did discuss them in connection with Dr. Berard's. She determined that she went further and discussed the Bradford Hill criteria. But to the extent that you don't have an association, you don't need to go further and discuss Bradford Hill with respect to causation. But the question, clearly, Your Honor, I mean, that's what this whole 10 days of hearings about was, you know, can Zoloft cause birth defects?
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, the court took issue, obviously, as we've talked about, with the absence of replicated statistically significant findings from non-overlapping data. Did the district court, do you think, invade the province of the jury by focusing on Dr. Jewell's conclusions as opposed to his methods?
Not at all, Your Honor. And I think the judge was very, very clear about that. And just like she didn't follow the conclusions of, you know, of Pfizer's experts, she very carefully dug in over, you know, 10 days of hearings and literally mountains of paper. And what we're talking about here is, as I said earlier, you know, at page 26, not just the expert reports from Dr. Jewell and Dr. Berard, but what she also looked at was things like the FDA. Has the FDA ever determined that Zoloft causes birth defects after all this? Absolutely not. Organizations like Otis, that are folks that deal with birth defects, do they say that Zoloft causes birth defects? No. In fact, there's no regulatory agency, there's no government body, there's no peer-reviewed study, there's no healthcare organization in the world that says that Zoloft causes these birth defects. To some extent, and I say this respectfully, I think counsel has tried, and they're very good advocates, they've tried to kind of put Judge Roof on an island, that she somehow created this heightened standard of Daubert. But I would suggest, as they've kind of suggested, that she's tried to create this kind of bright line legal rule that unless you have a statistically significant finding, all else fails. But in fact, I would submit that the folks who are on the island are Professor Dr. Berard and Professor Jewell, because no one supports the what they're saying. And that what I would also proffer is that if you really do take a step back practically and think about it, if in fact Professor Jewell had found something that no one else has found, that Zoloft causes birth defects, one would expect this to be published, to be peer-reviewed and subject. None of these opinions have been peer-reviewed and published, and in fact, what he's done, and this is one of the core criticisms, is that he's recalibrated and done post-hoc analysis of the experts in the field. So to answer your question directly, Your Honor, I'm sorry if I went a little bit on a tangent. I don't think that she has invaded in any way the province of the jury, because I think a core principle here is the concept of reliability. And what Judge Roof, I think, starkly understood was that if, in fact, you get past the reliability, and this is a matter of two experts who have reasonably reliable opinions that differ, that's exactly what we're supposed to allow to go to the jury. But there is a threshold issue, a threshold inquiry about whether it passes Daubert and whether it passes the reliability standard. And that's what Judge Roof did exactly here. And it's consistent.
How do you respond to your friend's comment that she did not consider the Bradford Hill factors, or all of them?
Well, I think the point is you don't get to Bradford Hill. You don't need to establish all of the Bradford Hill criteria unless you have a true association. And I think what Judge Roof found here, and what she found in her three prior decisions, was that based on all of the evidence, not just Wegrow, not just the Wemmerker study, but based on looking at everything, the plaintiffs had not established a strong association. So there was no need for her to chronicle.
So I'm just a little bit confused. Yes. So you're saying they did not meet the threshold of association?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Is that a factual legal issue? This whether or not there's an association, is that a factual legal issue?
I think the approach of Well, I think the excluding, well, let me say this. I think the factual determination about how you meet an association, in other words, what the criteria are for how epidemiologists and teratologists, that is a factual determination. In other words, you need replication, you need consistency. So that is a factual determination that I think is subject to a higher standard. Ultimately, I think the only legal standard here is, was summary judgment appropriate? And I think the answer to that is yes, having no experts. So, I think, again, the core issue here is Judge Roof really became a student of science, probably not unlike many of lawyers. I shouldn't say that, maybe she was, but she tried to understand, I think, over the course of a few years by reading literature, taking experts, looking at peer review studies, looking at all of taking testimony from both sides, and how it would be that epidemiologists and teratologists would go about determining causation. And this is fully consistent with what, again, Judge Giles didn't weigh grow. I think it's consistent with this court, though it's unpublished, in the Pritchard case. The Magistrini case dealt with this same issue, I think, DeLuca. So this is not, kind of a novel concept that there are factual predicates and understandings of how you would go about determining causation. That's exactly what the court did, and I submit respectfully that's exactly what the kind of analysis that we want courts to do, is roll up their sleeves, understand what the appropriate methodology is in a particular field. Don't create bright line rules necessarily, but you can't ignore.
Did Judge Roof create a bright line rule with respect to replicated consistent statistically significant studies?
I don't think she did at all. In fact, that issue was raised in connection with when she determined that Dr. Berard did not meet the standards under 702. The plaintiffs moved for reconsideration. They said, Judge, you got it wrong. In fact, almost the identical arguments here, and frankly, almost the identical arguments I was reading in the Pritchard case. I thought in some regards we could have changed the name. The plaintiffs argued there and here that you created a bright line rule, and she said, absolutely not. What I did was what Your Honor, Judge Roth said, was I tried to understand and I did a factual analysis of how you go about determining causation, and I scrupulously applied those standards and those factual findings to Professor Jewell. And I think when you do that, there's really, she chronicled, fatal methodological flaw on top of flaw. And it wasn't just about statistical significance, as Your Honors know. I mean, she talked about overlapping data. She talked about post hoc reanalysis of data. She talked about discounting meta-analysis that Professor Jewell had relied on in the Prozac litigation. She talked about how an author says one thing and Professor Jewell reads the study and says something else. All of this without explaining in the entire context, because you have to understand there's a huge amount of information. This is not a case where you have a new medicine come on the market, maybe there's one study. That's maybe a case for another day for Your Honor to deal with. Here we have medicine that's been on the market for literally decades. It's widely and hugely studied, and the information and data that has come out, in fact, the most recent data, all of it suggests no association, much less causation. There's a million women Heibrich study from Harvard that was published. There's the FURU study, which deals with the Danish information. There's the CDC commissioned a study, the REFIS study.
FURU is the most recent one, right?
FURU is it's one of the most recent. I think it's 2015. Mm-hmm. I think the Harvard study is 2015-16 as well. And the last thing I'll say, Your Honors, is that the way these – I see my time's almost up. May I have 30 seconds?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. The way these studies work is that the early studies, what they're supposed to do, this is how science is supposed to work. They identify some issues, and they identified very few, but they identified a statistical finding, and many of them said, well, this may be confounding, but we need to look at that. In fact, then science did what it was supposed to do. They went back and they looked, and in fact, all of these studies, the broader studies, said, yes, let's look at confounding. Is there something about the underlying disease state of depression that is causing these birth defects? And essentially, 201, they've all determined that they believe that it's not the Zoloft. There is other confounding. And, in fact, that's even what the Wemmerker study said that came out recently. So, unless Your Honor has...
I had one more.
Yes,
I started off, actually, with your friend saying, what about Rule 403? It seemed that there were two bases that she barred this expert on. Only one is dealt with in the briefs. What do we do with Rule 4?
Well, I think, Your Honor, as you said, it was an independent ground, and it was, in our view, not addressed, not contested. So I think that that alone would be a basis, and I think one of the amicus folks kind of focused on that as well. So I think having not addressed it, not challenged it, plaintiffs have waived that issue, and that would be an independent basis to affirm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Segar, let me start with the 403 point. The judge did no independent analysis, and so there's no basis independently to affirm. All of the analysis that was done under Rule 702. So if you were firm on a Rule 403, you wouldn't have a record on which to do so. Judge Roth, if I can go back and make another stab at the teratology point about the fact-finding, I don't agree with the idea that teratologists generally require replication. But if they do, Judge Roof didn't cite any evidence of that in the various opinions that she wrote on this subject. None. The only authority that she relied upon was Wade Grove. But if the teratologists do that, general acceptance is the old Fry standard, and the Supreme Court rejected that standard under Daubert. The Supreme Court in Daubert actually upheld this court standard in DeLuca 1. And in DeLuca 1, what this court said was, quote, even studies that each may be rejected as insignificant may be looked at collectively to be contradictory to the null hypothesis. That's at 911 F second at 948. So then if you look at the record in this case, I ask you to look at Joint Appendix 8391. On that page, Dr. Jewell looks at every single study. Every single study finds an odds ratio greater than one for some birth defect that one of these babies sustained after their moms took this drug. Where the dispute occurs is in the parentheses, which is the confidence interval for determining whether or not that odds ratio can be deemed to be statistically significant. So the whole fight here is not whether the studies show a positive association. They all do, every single one of them. The debate is over how finely you calibrate the statistical significance of their findings. So then that leads you back, what does the law require? In the First Circuit, the Millward case said, if this is at 639 F3rd at 24, the district court, quote, erred in treating the lack of statistical significance as a crucial flaw. That's exactly what Judge Roof did here. Because what Judge Roof did was to say, simply because the confidence interval has a lower bound that could not absolutely reject the null hypothesis in some of the studies, means that in those studies that did reject the null hypothesis, that there was a lack of replication. But yet that gets exactly to the point of what is the jury to be doing here. It's the jury's province to take these battles of the experts that are all upholding proper methodology and determine on the basis of the gestalt of factors what is more probable than not, preponderance of the evidence. And what the judge did here was to say, I'm going to take that away because I determine that on the basis of these confidence interval statistics that I'm not satisfied that there is replication. So whether
that's
you call
not,
it,
that's not her duty as a gatekeeper under Daubert?
No. Her duty as a gatekeeper is to determine, is this a qualified expert who is using general methodologically appropriate means? And then once an association is established, which here, four studies show an association, even if you accept the statistically significant confidence interval. Four of them do that. The judge is not to then say, well, there are six or seven other studies that I don't think quite get to the same level of statistical significance. Mr. Sheffield made very important and good arguments that he can make to the jury on cross-examination about the lack of peer review or confounding factors. But those are cross-examination issues that go to the weight. Because this court held just last week in the Carlo case, quote, the question of whether a study's results were properly calculated or interpreted ordinarily goes to the weight of the evidence, not to its admissibility. That's the slip opinion in Carlo at page 49. Here, we would submit respectfully, Judge Roof worked very hard on this, but obviously asked the wrong question, which is whether the court can determine replication and not whether that goes to the weight of the evidence appropriate for the jury.
All right.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Bill Bach for Plaintiff City Select.
We want to thank counsel for excellent briefing and argument on this very challenging case. Can we ask the parties to get a transcript made? The clerk can help you with that, and maybe you can split the cost.